Blow the horn. Go.
Everything that we do every day, we want to be a champion.
Get your mind right and let's go. Do the little things. Win every day.
It's a surplus to play football.
Everything with an attitude.
Alabama, you listen.
I don't give a shit who we're playing.
Don't let them play against and make his ass quit. That's our framework. That's our MO with the team.
Richardson breaks free on the sideline. End zone.
This is a mauling, folks, a mauling.
Fear the tide, honey badger.
Hello and welcome to the Alabama Football Podcast. Tom, the Mocs came to town for a glorified scrimmage. What did you take away from the exhibition?
Well, man, I was not able to be there in person. And so as soon as I heard the announcers talk about how successful the team was, but that their starting quarterback wasn't going to play, and that one of their wide receivers was going to have to step in, I knew it was going to be a long day for him.
Yeah, they try to maximize the talent that they do have, and so their backup quarterback is actually a receiver. That rather than keep his talent on the bench, they try to take advantage of it in the wide receiver. And so you do kind of disrupt. You know, the plus there is you get more talent on the field potentially, and then of course the minus is if you have to rotate the quarterback over, you really disrupt two positions. A contributor at their wide receiver and as well as the quarterback. I don't know that it would have mattered much if they had their kind of full allotment of starters appropriately placed. They never at no point really posed much of a threat, and the 49-0 score I think was appropriately representative of the game.
It was, and the best analogy for me is when you go back and watch the game, the linebackers look like cornerbacks and the defensive front looks like linebackers.
Yeah.
That whole little, just that transgression between those different lines, right? I mean, I didn't see the actual weight numbers, but they had to be only going 240, 250 on the front defensive line and had to be going 210 at the linebacker position.
Yeah, they were definitely a smaller school. They're not, what we call D1 or Division 1. So they're a lower grade, program, so to speak. And now they're competitive at their level. They're 8-4 after the contest with us. So they do well relative to their competition. But it was more than one step up in weight class to face Alabama, SEC, number one team in the country, defending national title. The accolades roll from there, right? So definitely, hey, a fantastic opportunity for those players, fantastic opportunity for the bottom line of the athletic department. And they came out and competed hard, but, outmatched as soon as they stepped off the bus, right?
No, they were, and we'll talk about this a little bit when we break down the Alabama defensive side of the ball. But they not only were they outmatched physically, but they were content to get this game over from the start. I mean, there were several conservative play calls of the 3rd and 8 variety where they'd run the ball where they really knew they weren't going to get a first down. To me, it just seemed like they're like, okay, we've collected our check and we don't want to get anybody hurt because we're playing for our championship and our conference. And, I saw the elapsed time of this ball game was only 2 hours and 39 minutes. I mean, this game flew by pretty quickly.
Yeah, it really did. They were definitely running the ball, up the middle. They tried to show us some different looks and tried to keep it game, but they were limited in their passing attack. And we talked about their, having their backup quarterback in, but they were limited in their passing attack, and I agree with you. I think they were looking, let's keep the clock moving, and that's a way that we can manage down the potential humiliation of a big score. You get some teams that are going to go out there and try to hang 70. I don't think that's the way we operate, but we've put 63 on a team before, and I think they managed that down, and in fact, had we not scored a couple of quick touchdowns, and I think specifically of the punt return for a touchdown, had we not put up a couple of quick scores, they could have even held it down. With their approach, they could have held it down even more.
Oh, sure, and we obviously could have put more on them. I mean, let's face it, it was 42-0 with 5 minutes left in the third quarter, and the final score was 49.
Yep.
So we only scored 7 points in the last, 18 minutes of the ball game.
Yep.
So, well, hey, let's start it off on, I do want to mention before you flip it to offense that just kudos to AJ McCarron. You know, the announcers reminded me that he had been tied with Jay Barker for 35 wins as a starting quarterback. And so with this win, you know, he's able to break the record for the most wins of 36 wins as a starting Alabama quarterback. So just, you know, just another great kudo to AJ McCarron.
Yeah, absolutely. And another stat that I saw kind of in parallel to that, and, you know, and AJ's a recipient of this as well, since he's a redshirt senior, but the redshirt seniors on this class, on the team with this win, ran their record up to 60-5.
Wow. Man, that's phenomenal. I even heard a stat before this game, you know, watching it on TV, where the local Alabama guys said that the senior class had lost two games, as they had lost two games as a senior class, but they had won two national championships following those two losses.
Yep.
And so I was like, man, think about that. Since losing the last two losses you've had, you have followed those two losses up with two national championships.
Yeah, that, you know, the loss to LSU and then the redemption for the victory, the loss to A&M last year. But, you know, right. So those seasons contained a loss, but they also contained a national title. And so, you know, you can't feel too bad about those losses. And so that's two of the five, right? And the other three came in the same season in 2010, which.
Hard to hang that on them, though, because I guess you have to, but they weren't really playing at that time. They were, you know, they were freshmen, but, I do think that when we talk about Auburn here at the end of this show, I do think that, you know, they remember what it was like when Auburn came to town in 2010. And I think that is still fresh in their mind for sure.
Yeah.
What jumps out at you on offense? I found it interesting to see how we would do things, you know, by not having Vogler in there and by not having TJ Yeldon in the game.
Yeah, those are two things that, you know, that really jumped out that, and they could have played. Both of them were dressed. Both of them could have played, but we made the decision to hold them out. So I think that's the right decision. I thought the running back tandem, we played Drake as the number one with Henry as the backup. And they both, I think, acquitted themselves very well. Drake was 11 carries for 77 yards and a touch. Henry, I noted, six carries for 66 yards and another touchdown. And he really looked live back there. There were some times earlier in the season where I thought Henry looked a little lost, especially in some blitz pickup. But he seemed very comfortable on the field there on Saturday.
Well, what do you think about that? The fact that, you know, this is kind of the game within the game. I find it a little interesting that he was that number two guy. What's your thoughts that it wasn't a Tenpenny or it wasn't a D Hart or it wasn't a Jostin Fowler? I think that's very interesting that he was the guy whose number was called to back up Drake.
Yeah, I don't know that I was that surprised, kind of given where we are here. Fowler hasn't received a lot of carries. I would say less than I expected him to carry to get, and so not surprised that he's not the one that stepped up. You know, he's been manning that H back. He's getting a lot of reps and some catches and playing H back. He's certainly contributing, but not running out of the backfield as much as I would like. So by this point in the season, I don't think that was a surprise. We've seen D Hart, and I'm very, you know, pleased and, you know, proud. I don't know if that's the right word, but he had his first career touchdown, and so that was good to see. You know, glad that he was able to do that. But I have, and look, we said this in the preseason, that any carries that he gets this season will be meaningful for him, but not for the team. I don't see him as an effective runner, and so I don't see him. You know, I wouldn't have picked him to be the guy to step up. Earlier in the season, I certainly would have said Tenpenny would be the guy, but I think he's been banged up a little bit. I think he had an ankle sprain, and I think that's kind of limited him. And I think all of those, you know, kind of three factors kind of conspired together. And then Henry's developing too, you know, that I don't want to sound like he doesn't get any credit for it. He's been developing, and like I said, he looked comfortable back there. So I think all of that kind of mixes together, and you know, it congealed into him occupying that third spot. Which, hey, if you go back to kind of our preseason stuff, that's about what we predicted. You know, I thought you may have had him more, you know, closer up into the two, but I think, you know, we had them slotted as 1, 2, 3.
Oh, we did. I just thought it was interesting that he got the opportunity, and probably it did have as much to do with Tenpenny as anything else.
Yeah.
I also thought that, you know, OJ Howard getting the start was good. What did you think with our play calling on offense? We'd be remiss not to mention, you know, because all the media has mentioned the big brother hookup. What did you think that, you know, Nick Saban came in out in his coach's show and he basically just, you know, took credit for it, that at halftime he called for AJ to get the ball to his brother. What do you think about Saban? That's pretty cool if he's the one that wanted that to happen.
Yeah, I think that. You know, I think that's good. I think that's something that AJ had kind of been asking for as well. You know, I think that's appropriate. You know, we don't always do things for sentimental reasons and such, but, you know, you take AJ McCarron, a fifth-year senior, all that he has contributed to the program and all of the success that he has on senior day, the last opportunity he has to play in, you know, in the stadium, and, you know, you could run a play in a game that in the scheme of things doesn't mean a whole lot and get him a catch for, you know, to his brother, pass to his brother. I think that's the right thing to do. I don't think you go out and you do stuff like that just to do it every week and all that. But I think on those rare occasions where it makes sense, I think this was one of those, and I thought it was nice.
It was. I thought it was a nice gesture. It was a nice way to handle it. I thought Amari kind of left him hanging because, he did kind of an Olay block and Corey didn't really have a chance there. And it was kind of funny when AJ ran up to him, it wasn't a pat of, you know, attaboy. It was kind of, he was kind of giving him a little grief that he didn't make more out of the play than he did.
Right.
And, when you look back at it, it's like, well, man, I mean, he didn't really have much of a chance because Amari didn't really do much of a block there. And it was, you know, it was, his fate was sealed right after he caught the ball.
Well, I agree with you, but, you know, 20 years from now around, you know, the Thanksgiving Day table with the families gathered, you know, Corey will have scored a touchdown and AJ will say that he got, you know, sacked in the backfield. So,
yes,
those kind of experiences take on a life of their own.
No, that's true. You know, I think Chattanooga wishes they would have had more more players like Chaz Moore. One of their cornerbacks, number one, I did notice when going back and looking at the game again that, man, he made several plays in this ball game, and they just needed more guys like him. He jumped out, and he was really the only guy on defense for them that really didn't seem outmatched. He really did not. He seemed like he belonged on the field, I guess is what I'm saying, and I didn't notice that from any of the other players.
Yeah, and there's going to be, you know, there's going to be players from small schools like this that do pop. I do think Terrell Owens, you know, who had great success in the NFL for a number of years, I think he's a Chattanooga product. So, you know, they're going to have, you know, some talent. They're just not going to have enough of it to really make this a go. And, you know, he's certainly someone that contributed on their side defensively. What else kind of jumped out at you from, you know, on the offensive side?
Well, I just thought the play calling was interesting. We talked at the beginning of the season that, you know, we're not sure what we're going to get with the field goal kicking. And so, you know, how is that going to predicate our play calling between the 30 and the 40-yard line? And I just found it interesting that early in the game, twice on fourth down, you know, between the 35 and 38, that we went for it. And, you know, Chris, the local announcer, you know, was basically telling Tyler Watts that he thought that, you know, Saban was just testing the team to see how they could respond, right? Kind of getting them back in a groove. Before I give you my thoughts on breaking down one of those plays, what did you think about that? The fact that twice we could have tested and given him a chance to kick a 50-plus yarder and we didn't do it.
you know, there's two sides of the discussion, and I think the right one to sort of announce on the air, like, you know, like Chris did, is that we're challenging our offense, and I think that's appropriate. I think both things can be true. I think we did challenge our offense, and they stepped up, and, you know, we kind of, you know, we wanted to see what they could do kind of with that, you know, quote unquote pressure. At the same time, I don't know what confidence we have in kicking a 54-yard field goal. So, especially, you know, kind of on a cold, blustery day, you know, if you discount for the weather conditions as well, you know, that makes a 54-yarder that much harder to kick. I think it was all about, you know, really testing the offense there.
Well, but he might need that in 3 or 4 days now. Shouldn't you give him a chance to whack one of them and see how he does? Why not now instead of against Auburn?
Well, I hear what you're saying, and I think there's a certain amount of logic to that. And, you know, you could certainly argue, you know, let's go out there and give it a shot. What I might wonder is what fragility is there, you know, kind of in his psyche?
That's what I thought you were going to say. Yeah.
Because we kind of know, you know, where our concern has been, you know, relative to that. And
right.
So here you are. You've been kicking gangbusters. You've been knocking it out. Let's go out there in subpar conditions and have you kick a 54-yarder, miss it, so that next time when we need it, maybe you have some self-doubt. That's kind of the direction that I would go there. You know, again, I put a lot of credence to the weather conditions. Had it been, you know, a Chamber of Commerce type day, then I think it's an easier decision to maybe give them a go at it. But I think with the weather such that it was, and it wasn't that it was horrible. It was just cold and a little bit, you know, spitting rain and
right
windy and such that it would have increased the level of difficulty. If we say, you know, the old Clint Eastwood, you know, line, a man's got to know his limitations, you might reasonably say that's outside of his limitations.
No, that's fair. Well, one of those fourth down plays, I just want to mention, we had Jalston Fowler. We pulled Drake out, and we had Jalston Fowler in the game. And so we have Jalston lined up in the shotgun next to AJ, and he goes to run like an out pattern. And he doesn't even run enough yards for the first down. He doesn't even run past the sticks.
Yep.
And that was what I wanted to break down is so we test the team with the fourth down play, but we just have the wrong personnel in on that play. I don't understand. That's not his skill set. His skill set has been doing that at the goal line, but that was not his skill set.
Well, I think we were trying to catch him in space and with his size, get them out there against, you know, some of their smaller players. But I agree with you. We went under the sticks in that situation a couple of times. And in that regard, I thought, you know, even though we did go for it a couple of times on fourth down, and we actually, you know, did keep some drives alive, you know, with those types of conversions, I also thought at times we were very conservative with some of our play call. And I don't know if it's not wanting to show anything. I don't know that I subscribe to that. I just think that we were just trying to, I just thought we were conservative sometimes with the play calls, and we weren't going to extend ourselves to try to run up the score in a game that we have, you know, easily in hand.
I'm with you. I just don't know if I'd have had him in that
yeah.
situation. So yeah. I'm with you on that. I thought that I love the two play action passes where we took some strikes, once to Norwood, once to Amari for touchdowns.
Yep.
Those poor cornerbacks, man, they didn't even challenge the play. I mean, they were playing so far off, and then when they ran the post pattern, they didn't even come up to challenge the ball. I mean, that just seemed like such gimme pitch and catch on those two touchdowns.
Yeah, it really was. Those were easy plays, and they looked really good. It was good to see both of those guys, you know, score some touchdowns. We talked about Hart getting his first career touchdown, and so that was nice. You know, one play that looked really good, we talked about the running backs, and, you know, one running back, you know, kind of with the air quotes that jumped out at us was, was Black, the wide receiver,
Black, yeah.
who actually lined up in the backfield and got the handoff kind of, you know, he didn't come running across the formation, but, you know, from kind of a split back, almost a jet sweep is kind of the look that it had. And he had some nifty moves down near the goal line and looked like he was going to be down or out of bounds, but he got it across the goal line. So that was kind of an exciting play. Good for
him. It was, and it was first and 10 at the 31. So it was a 31-yard touchdown, you know, jaunt.
Yep.
But, you know, going back to AJ real quick with Cooper, you know, Saban said in his coach's show that the offense, the first string was going to run, you know, they were going to be out there for that first series of the third quarter, and then he was yanking them. So I did find it interesting on the TV that right after he threw it to his brother, he got a little emotional, it seemed like, you know, as much as a football player is going to. And then he started clapping his hands and saying, come on, guys. And the very next play, he took the shot to Amari, or two plays later. So I found it interesting. The coach is like, okay, you know, Saban's like, I did what I wanted to do.
Yep.
I said I wanted them to get a score. Now I'm going to take a shot from 40 yards out and see if I can get the score the easy way. Yep. So it wasn't like we're going to methodically march down the field and take a chance that AJ gets hurt. We're going to take a shot from the 40 and score and get him out of there.
Yep, and call it done.
Yep. Hey, what'd you think about Blake Sims? Because to me, you know, he came in right after that. You know, you saw he was 2 for 4 in the game. You know, one of those passes he made, you know, it was a quick out to Kenny Bell. He telegraphed it to the cornerback. The cornerback saw it coming loud and clear, had plenty of time to knock it away. Could have got a pick six almost if that would have been an SEC corner.
Yep.
How would you take Blake's play with Saban bringing him in and only letting him attempt 4 passes?
Well, I think at that stage of the game, we were in a run out the clock mode. So we didn't necessarily want to take a bunch of strikes. And he was 2 of 4 for 13 yards for a reason. And I think that's, you know, as much his ability to pass the ball. And, you know, people get worked up about he's improved. And I just don't fall into that trap. I've seen, you know, his play. He's a great athlete. And, you know, I think in a different role or a different capacity, you know, he could, you know, be very successful at a different, and I'm not asking him to transfer, but at a different level of competition, he might be actually very good at the quarterback position. He's just not an SEC caliber quarterback. And, you know, frankly, an upper tier SEC team, certainly he's not that caliber of quarterback. And so for all the kind of hot and bothered press about, you know, he's our next year starter and who's it going to be, I just guarantee you that it's not Blake Sims. I have a high degree of confidence.
We don't know what the reason is why he's been acting like the two, but we can both concur he will not be the guy, right?
Yeah, I think that, you know, and you know, even back to kind of some of the preseason guide, you know, don't draw conclusions on who plays the backup role this year is sort of the automatic, you know, starter next year. Because Saban's not going to give you the biggest question of next season. He's not going to give it to us this season. He's not going to give us the answer this season. Now, I expected to see more of Alec Smith over the Alec Morris over the course of the season than we have. He did see his first action, you know, 2 snaps, both handoffs, kind of the last 2 plays of the game, our last 2 offensive plays of the game. So, you know, I was glad that he got in there, but, you know, at this stage of the season, that was almost kind of a slap in the face.
Oh, sure. And going to Tenpenny real quick, because we talked about his injury. Were you surprised we saw him at all? Right, you know, after, you know, DeHart started the fourth quarter and then Tenpenny came after that. Were you surprised we saw him at all?
No, I just think that's reflective of, you know, he had gotten a little banged up. You know, obviously, you know, he had already burned his red shirt. He's healthy, and we're in a situation where we can give him some plays for free. You know, let's do it. Because what's going to happen is if we get into a situation where we have to go deep to get a productive running back, it's not going to be DeHart.
I gotcha. I also will say real quick that I love seeing these backup linemen get as much work as they've gotten. I think due to injuries and due to a thin rotation in years past, this is the most work we've seen these guys get that I can remember. And I'm just really excited that Alphonse Taylor and Grant Hill and Lindsey and some of these guys have gotten as much work as they've gotten this year.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, one of the things I wanted to make sure I touched on offense and kind of segues with what you're saying is, you know, Kellen Williams came in with the backup offensive lineman, but he actually got a series or two earlier than that when Ari went down with a sprained ankle, and it looked like it was going to be more significant. It looked like maybe it was his knee, and he's had some history with injuries, but turns out it was just an ankle. You know, he was able to kind of get up and hobble a little bit, but not too bad, back to the sidelines, and saw him walk. This was just before half, and saw him walk around to go back to the locker room ahead of the team, just to kind of go back there and get a head start. And he seemed to be moving. He wasn't running, wasn't jogging, but just kind of walking, seemed to be, doing pretty good. So he'll probably be in a boot for a little bit. I think he missed practice yesterday. I think back in practice today as we record this. So I think that odds are, Ari will be available for the game this weekend.
Well, Saban commented in the coach's show that, it was the ankle sprain, and unlike the skill positions, where you got all this cutting and stuff, the nice thing it is when it comes to a guard or something, is that something that can be taped up, and, maybe we don't call his number to pull, around the right or left end, but that's a manageable injury, more so for an offensive lineman than it is for another position on offense.
Yeah, and I also feel at an interior guard position like that, we have more options. Straight up, we have Kellen Williams. If we want to try to do something creative with Ryan Kelly and Chad Lindsey, we can do that. If we want to bump Shepard down and bring in Grant Hill, I think we have a lot of options. Bring in even an Alphonse Taylor. I think we have a lot of options, probably more than we would, had it been the other Quanjo.
No, that is true. Anything else jumped out at you on offense?
No. Why don't you give me your mini game ball?
Man, mini game ball, that's tough because there's a lot of guys that made some first-time contributions. I think I'm going to give it to Chris Black. The highlight reel was the 131-yard touchdown run, but, just for everything the kid's gone through, coming out higher ranked than Amari Cooper, figuring he's going to be the guy, made the splash at the A-Day game with TJ Yeldon. I just hope that he's able to, to do what we're seeing Geno Smith do. Maybe he's a year behind Geno Smith in that evolution, but I hope next year we're talking a lot more about Chris Black, and so I'm going to give it to him.
Yeah, I think there's a great shot at that. He certainly showed some athleticism on that play. That he ran for a touchdown, certainly some versatility as well. So he's definitely someone that we need to have on our watch list. I'm going, we do mini game balls, and I'm going to go a mid-size game ball. I'm not giving it to a star, but I'm giving it to a player that we all kind of know, Anthony Steen. A couple things that, a couple reasons. He graded out the best amongst the offensive linemen, and he's done that a number of times this season. And so this is almost kind of a career achievement for Anthony, because at different times we've given him a tough go. And, so kind of his last home game, kind of want to recognize that. He has grown and developed as a player. Has always sort of been one of the, kind of one of Saban's guys in terms of his attitude and his persona. But he's developed and improved as a player. I think he's our best, if not the best. He's one of our, probably top two best offensive linemen that we have this season. It's going to be a high draft pick, relative to the guard position in the draft. And, just hats off to a hard worker. He's going to be one of those guys that, Anthony Steen, interior lineman, don't know that much about him. Doesn't really matter. Linemen are all the same. And he's going to be one of those guys that we're going to miss along the offensive line next year. So I just want to give a hats off to Anthony Steen.
No, I definitely think Steen is somebody that we're going to miss. We were very critical of him early on. He had his first big splash in that, unfortunate game of November 2010 against Auburn. And, had the Nick Fairley play that with the fumble that was, so frustrating. And just look where he's come since then. And he's a guy that I know he hasn't missed a block. He hasn't missed a block, an assignment that I've seen this year that was been glaring that's caused any big, mess up in the backfield.
Right.
And so he's definitely come a long way and is, is probably the leader of the offensive line for, you know, for good reason.
He's going to be one of those guys. Here's my prediction on Anthony Steen. He's going to be one of those guys. And if you look at the NFL and you look at the Philadelphia Eagles and you look at you know, one of their starting guards, Evan Mathis, and you think, you know, the years back that he played at the university and didn't think that you know, he would have the success that he did, and he's gone on to contribute in the NFL for years. Anthony Steen's just going to be one of those guys we're going to look up 10 years from now, and, you know, and he is just a center point, you know, kind of a linchpin in the center of somebody's offensive line.
Oh, absolutely. And you're staring at my notes, because I was gonna mention Evan Mathis, because when he came to Alabama, you and I thought he came to Alabama just because of his family's connections.
Yep.
And he was 250 pounds, and we said, how's this guy going to play offensive line at Alabama? And look what he did.
Yep.
Hey, flipping the field to defense, you know, one of the third starter that didn't see the field was Ballou. And so kind of game within a game again, I thought it was interesting that Mari Smith gets the nod along with Cyrus. And so Cyrus gets moved to the boundary corner where Ballou plays, and Maurice comes in to take over the field corner. Give me your thoughts on that. It was Maurice Smith.
Yeah, I have to say I was a little bit surprised at that as well. You know, that marked the sixth different starter that we've rolled out there at cornerback. And, you know, you start to wonder, well, who would it be? You know, we rested Ballou, and again, he dressed. And so he could have gone out there. I don't think it was worth, you know, we're trying to get him healthy. And so I don't think it was worth, you know, putting him out there necessarily. You know, Silva is someone that I thought would start. And so maybe he's not 100% healthy. He did play and he looked a little tentative, but not so much that, you know, we didn't want him to play at all. And so he did get some action. Then you start to wonder, you know, John Fulton, probably not going to start him, even if it is senior day. Freshman Eddie Jackson, I would have thought that we would have gone back to him. We didn't, and so we just said next man up is Maurice Smith. And so a little bit of a surprise. I thought he played relatively well his first start, his first true extended action. You know, they didn't pass a whole lot, so he was up more, you know, kind of supporting some swing action and some runs. He's a less physical tackler, I'll say, than some of the other guys. But I think in coverage, I think he certainly has some upside. It was good to see him play. He actually rotated a little bit. He played some of the star as well as some of the corner. You know, I think he's got some good upside. It's interesting to see. You know, we've got some young guys at the position. I think we've got some future there at the position, and I think he's going to be a key part of it.
Well, I just wanted to get your take on that, because whereas we said Saban did a good thing letting AJ throw it to his brother, he dropped the ball on this one.
Yeah.
I think by far, hands down, John Fulton should have been the guy. Mm. We're playing freaking Chattanooga. He is a senior. We've talked about what this kid has done for this team. This kid helped us stay in the game last year against Georgia in the SEC championship game. With a bum toe, and they kept picking on him, and he kept making plays. The reason I mention that real quick is because was it just a handful of plays? Sure it was. But still, it was very important. And he has exemplified the attitude that we wanted Geno Smith to do, and he's done it game after game after game, and he runs out there as gunner on special teams and just does what he's supposed to do. And so I noticed he didn't come in the game until 10 minutes left in the fourth quarter.
Right.
And so at that point, he comes in with Eddie Jackson. At that point, Sylvie rotates out and Fulton comes in. And I just think that was piss poor. And I beg your pardon, it was only 9 minutes left. I think that was wrong. I think Saban dropped the ball on that one.
I disagree with you.
I think Fulton should have started with Cyrus Jones, especially – with, you know, you got a wide receiver playing quarterback. They obviously weren't trying to throw the ball. Let him have his day let him have his day out there, because he's not really going to get challenged.
Yeah, I disagree with you. You know, the whole thing with the deal with McCarron is that, you know, we don't do stuff sentimental just for the sake of doing stuff sentimental. That was above and beyond. That was a fifth-year quarterback with two national titles that he's won. He has as many losses as he does national titles. You know, he has actually three rings because he was on the 09 team. He's positioned you for, you know, three in a row national titles. You know, he's going to go down as one of the winningest quarterbacks in the history of college football.
I'm not comparing the two.
So I think that's an extreme exception in doing something for the sake of sentimentality. You know, if you want to take a senior cornerback who has flashed at times, but it has of late demonstrated an inability to cover, and you're going to start him, you run a greater risk of embarrassing the hell out of him than you do, you know, kind of making his day.
Well, I don't think the threat would have been there. I think John Fulton is going to give you the same coverage skills that you got with Amari Smith. I actually wanted to talk when we flipped the ball to defense. I did want to talk about that. I was surprised they didn't throw the ball more, knowing that we've got Amari Smith and Osiris Jones. Because, you know, when they did throw the ball in the second quarter, Amari Smith was beaten badly, and yeah, it wasn't even close. Well, and so I actually think had they picked on our corners earlier in the game, they would have had some more success.
Well, yeah, had they had the ability to, and had
They didn't try is what I'm saying. Well, in the first quarter, they ran the ball. The second quarter, when they threw a couple 15-yard outs, Maurice Smith wasn't anywhere near the ball.
Yeah, I think they had, you know, limited ability, you know, relative to trying to do that. They took a couple shots and, you know, and they did all right. You know, if you're going to get the same coverage out of Maurice as, you know, out of John Fulton as you are out of Maurice, I'd rather have the freshman make the freshman mistakes.
Well, I'm just saying it's senior day. It's his last game in Bryant-Denny. I don't think you'd have lost anything there. Hey, what I will tell you on the Sylvie thing, I did notice when he came in the third quarter, they ran to his side immediately. He tried to have a cut block in front of him, and you were there in person, so, you know, curious your angle there. On the TV, he looked incredibly gimpy. He was protecting his ankle very, very much, and he wasn't even running half speed, it didn't look like to me. So from what I saw, the coach is saying he's close. He's nowhere close to being the starter in the next two or three ball games that could happen for us.
Yeah, and probably he's not. Now, you know, a bowl game, you know, that
would be different.
Would be different. You know, that's more than a month out.
I should have said the next 11 days, I don't think we see him what I should have said.
Yeah, no, and that's fair. You know, that's fair. And I think that's accurate, right? I think that's a reflection of, you know, if he was not one of the two starters here and, you know, and he wasn't going to start ahead of Mo Smith, then, you know, he wasn't ready to start. And so I think we wanted to get him out there and see how close he was, see how close he thought he was, you know, kind of in live action. There were a couple times he looked, you know, really gimp, and a couple times, you know, he looked less so. And so I don't know what to take from that other than, you know, maybe mentally he's not. And look, there is something too, you know, mentally you just have to suck it up and play sometimes, you know, when it's a little bit sore, especially this far into the season. And, you know, maybe a true freshman, you know, maybe he's not sort of hardened that way as some of the other guys. You know, Ballou would have gone out there and not complained. And Sylvie, you know, I don't know, maybe, and he's not a freshman. He's, you know, a redshirt sophomore. So he's been around a little bit. He should maybe have a little, you know, mustard on a sandwich than what he showed. But, you know, but perhaps not, because he is a speed guy.
Oh, sure.
More so than a physical guy.
Yeah.
So maybe he feels, you know, less than when he's off a step. And, you know, whereas a physical guy, you know, is going to feel, I may be off a step, but I still have my physicality about him. Whereas Sylvie kind of feels like, you know, a cat on flypaper. Something just doesn't feel right.
No, that's a good point. I just wanted to comment, you know, that I don't think we're, you know, definitely not going to see him, you know, between now and a bowl game. Hey, I wanted to touch on Eddie Jackson, because Eddie Jackson got to come into the game when Sylvie came into the game in the third quarter. So they rotated out Cyrus and Maurice Smith, and they brought in you know, Eddie Jackson with Sylvie. Late in that game, Jonathan Allen made his second flash play of the ball game. Great hat on the ball to cause that fumble. But Eddie Jackson's play there and what he showed in his athleticism to chase that ball in the secondary and return that ball to the 6-yard line just shows you flashes of why I'm still holding out that I think he's going to be one of those guys next year. I just, you know, for everything you just talked about with Maurice, et cetera, Eddie Jackson's got that physicality, but he's got more athleticism than the Sylvie and the Maurice Smith and all. And so right now, you know, I think it's going to be the Geno Smith, you know, Eddie Jackson show next year.
Yeah. And, you know, Geno, it'll be interesting to kind of see where, you know, he moves around and plays. I don't know that he'll be a corner next year, but, you know, kind of the sky's the limit as to where, you know, necessarily we could put him. And I think Jackson probably is the guy. I am so surprised that he has not started. And I know that he had an ankle. Now, he's been back on special teams. And so, you know, presumably he's been back, you know, for a while. And there's a part of me that's not surprised. There's a part of me that is surprised that he's not started each of those games. And especially this one.
Yes.
Where we're bringing in, you know, another freshman at the position. So
that speaks volumes about what's going on, right?
Yeah.
That really does. And I noticed when we went to a 3-cornerback look in the third quarter that Mari Smith came back in the game, that Cyrus was done, but that we brought Mari Smith back. So at one point we got to see Eddie Jackson, Mari Smith, and Sylvie in the game at the same time.
Yeah.
Hey, tell me a little bit about Reuben Foster, because I got to play. I got to get in here. But you've had some interesting comments about number 9. Some of their offensive plays made him definitely flash in this ball game.
You know, we're going to get to the comments in a minute, but one of the commenters asked the question, you know, hey, you mentioned that Reuben Foster reminds you of Jarrell Harris, and then you kind of stopped. What does that mean? You know, was kind of the question. And so, you know, here's what that means to me. And, you know, you don't have to agree, Tommy, but you know kind of where I am on this. Reuben Foster, and he's a true freshman, so he has every opportunity in the world to prove me wrong. But he dresses the part. He looks the part. He's a highly recruited, superior athlete. Everyone in the, you know, kind of in the fan base is so excited to have him on the team and can't wait for him to play and his opportunity to shine. But when he gets on the field, he looks lost, and he looks out of place, and he can't beat out the people ahead of him. Now, a couple differences. Reuben Foster has better talent ahead of him to try to beat out than did Jarrell. But, you know, they both kind of, you know, if it were an obstacle course, they'd be all-stars. But it's not an obstacle course. It's read, it's react, it's playing football. And so those that disagree with me, and I hope that I'm wrong, because the kid's only a freshman. He has a long way to go. That was just my first immediate reaction when I saw him, you know, kind of response when I saw him on the field. This guy reminds me of, kind of fill in the blank, Jarrell Harris. Now, he flashed Saturday against Chattanooga. And so you could say, well, that's evidence that you're wrong. Well, Jarrell Harris had his best day against Georgia State and looked like a world beater against Georgia State. And so, you know, it sets up where it's almost Reuben Foster can't be right if I'm going to be a jackass about my opinion. But I have every belief that he's going to prove me wrong in the long term. I'm just saying his first glimpses of action remind me of Jarrell Harris.
Well, there was a couple times where I don't know if we had their playbook, because I want to talk about Landon Collins in a second. But there was a couple times where Reuben Foster, on these slow developing plays they were doing in the backfield, he flashed in a couple times unblocked and made plays in the backfield.
Oh, absolutely.
Well, there was one other time that he came in that I thought of you, where he tripped over himself and fell down in the backfield and wasn't involved on the play.
Yeah.
So he got into the backfield, but literally tripped and fell down.
Yeah.
And so there was, you know, two different ends of that continuum there. So I didn't see where he finished out on the stat sheet, but I thought of you when I saw that play.
Well, he had five tackles and one tackle for a loss. And so, you know, he was productive, which, you know, hats off. And I still have, you know, very high hopes for what he can do over his career.
Well, just talking about this offense for a second, you know, there was another play where Landon Collins motions from the left to the right with the tight end. And then he comes up to the line of scrimmage, and it's like he knows where the ball is going, and he runs right by the tight end unblocked and, you know, forces a quarterback to pitch it to the running back and makes the play. And it just seemed like I can count 8 or 10 times where, you know, we just knew what was coming. The commentators said that you know, they were going to run several different variations of a similar look to a play. Yep. And it seems by the time we got to the, you know, second quarter before the starters came out, they had kind of figured a bunch out.
Well, here's where I'm just so excited about our coach and the fact that he leaves no detail, you know, unexamined and unexplored and unoptimized. I don't think it's any I don't think there's any coincidence that we played a Chattanooga team who runs a zone read, quarterback dives, read option, you know, kind of that run option type of attack the week before we played Auburn.
Absolutely by design. I would agree with that.
And so I just found myself, you know, just kind of grinning. You know, all the Auburn fans are all excited about, we get a bye week, da 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 da. That's fine. This is better than a bye week.
Sure.
You know,
that's a great point.
We play an opponent, we maintain our routine, maintain our schedule. You go through and you play a game, you get your starters out early. It's not really a contest, but what you get to see is someone run this style of offense better than your scout team could run it.
Because they do it
all the time. Not that they're necessarily even better athletes than our scout team. You know, walk-ons, I don't know, you could, you know, that's a debate. But they run it all the time. They do it. And so they're not going to give you a crappy look because they don't know how to run it.
Well, and it just so happened, ironically, that quarterback gets held out. You've got to put in your wide receiver who is even more athletic and is going to show that look even better.
Especially on the running. Now,
right, on the running.
Auburn's going to open it up, and they have some passing. You know, they have a dynamic that'll be a little different, but
he showed it better on the running, though,
and so we got to focus on the run. And guys, if you can, you know, if we can man up and fill the gaps and play disciplined, contained football, then, you know, then this is, you know, then we got a really good look at that part of the attack. And then we'll worry absolutely. About, you know, then we can spend some time. And I'll go back to, you know, this was always the thing with Jarrell. You know, he could make phenomenal plays. But when we play an attack where, you know, just like this, where we don't need you to be Superman, we need you to stand here and watch this door. Because as soon as you get out of position, a running back's going to come right through it.
Right.
And so as soon as he gets himself out of position, now he may make three, you know, spectacular plays in the backfield, but he's going to leave that door unintended and they're going to run for 20. And that's the kind of thing, you know, Saban wants somebody that's going to, you know, play the responsibility rather than, you know, a freelancing upside.
No, absolutely. Hey, one other thing I just want to point out real quick on defense, Cyrus Jones almost had a great interception on the sideline, which just shows he does have a good, you know, nose for the ball.
Oh yeah.
And Geno Smith, you know, had another, you know, big third down pass deflection. You know, it seems like he's had one each game for the past two or three games. And so, you know, that was one of his big highlights, but that was kind of what we've come to see from him.
Yeah. You know, we talked about him last week and doing things, not necessarily showing up in the stat sheet, but, you know, representative of his play. And it seemed like just after that, there was an article in the Tuscaloosa News about, you know, his performance not showing up in the stat sheet. And I was like, geez, you know, I'm glad we recorded our show before that article came out.
Right.
But, hey. You know, Geno did get some additional run on Saturday, not only at his sort of free safety, you know, slash money position, but he did actually step in and play some at the star. So he rotated in when Jarek rotated out, and then Mo played some at the star as well. So it was neat to kind of see the rotation there. And in fact, when he came in and he was playing, I was like, oh, there, we're in a dime. We're in a dime. I was like, no, wait a second. That's not a dime. And I started counting out my DBs, and I was like, no, we're in a nickel. He's back in the star position. So I kind of, you know.
Well, late in the game, he was in there with Jarek Williams.
Play his money position. And so, you know, that's the dime. And so he did play the money, but there were, you know, he's the starting, you know, money back. He's the starting, you know, dime. And so, you know, nerd alert, I count our DBs every play, but you kind of get some of the rotation. And well, you know, when Jarek's out there wearing nickel, you know, when Gino's out there wearing dime. And so I saw Gino out there and I just said dime. And I was like, no, wait a second. There's too many guys at the line of scrimmage. There's too many guys in the box for us to be in a dime. And so, you know, counted it out, and we were really in a nickel. And so, yeah, he played both, but he did get some run back at sort of his old stomping ground there at the star position.
And John Miller got a little action.
He did.
You never know. You know, I'm glad he got a little play.
Yeah, you know, you can tell when he's in. You can tell when he's in there because it's like, who's that defensive end playing safety?
Oh, I love his size, man. Can you imagine if everybody, you know, big recruit out of high school went to, you know, signed with Stanford at the last minute, you know, was down to Stanford, Alabama. Then he went the baseball route, has done a walk on here at Alabama, is 28 years old. But man, just imagine if he can pick up and just be a little bit of a contributor for us in the future. With the size that he brings to that position, man, that could be fun to watch.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, I want to give you my mini game ball. I'm going to get mine before you get yours.
I was going to ask you to give me some Mosley report.
Well, no, that's true, man. The Mosley report, you know, his flash was early in the game. He was really kind of anticipating what they were going to do early as far as just taking. He seemed to be taking more chances than he normally does. He seemed to, I don't want to say reckless abandonment, but some his read and react, right? He knew he kind of had nothing to lose. It was kind of like if I misstep here, I can catch him from behind.
Yeah.
And so I kind of felt like he was saying, I'm just going to fly around even more than I normally do because it's my last game in Bryant-Denny and take a few chances that I might not normally take. And so that was a side of him that I'm not used to seeing.
No, I think that's, you know, I think that's fair. And I think maybe a little bit is, you know, I'm going to have a little extra fun here. And maybe a little bit of it is I'm going to test my instincts on a couple of these plays because I can, and I'm going to see it next week. And, you know, those kinds of things, you know, I don't know, maybe that's overthinking it, but you know, he has really kind of stepped up his game the last couple of weeks, which is really saying something because his game's, you know, top shelf already as it is. You know, he finished with 7 tackles, 2 tackles for loss. You know, I don't know what else to keep saying about the guy that other than, you know, his days playing for us are limited and, you know, enjoy every snap of it you get.
Well, he was interviewed on the last coach's show for this game, and it was just nice of him talking about how, you know, he had told he was committed to graduating before he left the University of Alabama, which kudos to him. And then, you know, he wanted to come back and try to be the first team to win 3 in a row.
Yep.
And so, you know, I just hope for him that he can accomplish, you know, he's about to accomplish one of those by the end of the semester. And hopefully when the bowl game comes around, it will be the right game for him. And with the end of that game, he will have completed both of those missions.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, give me your mini game ball.
Man, I'm just going to go with Jonathan Allen before you jump up and steal mine. because, you know, they said this guy was up to about 263 pounds. It was nice to see D-liner get in the game a little bit. It was nice to see about, you know, some of these other young kids. But Jonathan Allen is the next kid that is starting to flash for me like Dalvin Tomlinson was and like Jeffrey Pagan did last year. Yep. And of all the young guys, he's the guy I'm the most excited about in that class.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, I went Jonathan Allen as well. You know, three tackles, two tackles for loss, one forced fumble, you know, kind of all over the stat sheet, contributing early. I like his motor, and I like the upside that he brings to us.
Well, I definitely was glad that we saw, you know, a bunch of these young kids get to play. But he's just the guy that I think is the, you know, of all the true freshmen, right, that we've been talking about, like the Reuben Fosters and stuff, he's got to be the headliner of that class right now on defense as far as the contribution that has been made.
Ahead of an Alshon?
Well, no, I guess second. I guess second. But thanks for that. But yeah, I guess a second. But because Ashawn has, you know, Ashawn has definitely made many flashes. And I guess that's our transition to special teams real quick. We might as well start off with his blocked field goal.
Yes.
You know, let's just add that to his freshman line item. That was a nice play from the big boy.
Yeah, you know, that was phenomenal. There was just a couple of things really that stood out to me on special teams, and that's certainly one. You know, we had watched, you know, I was at the game with my dad, and we got there early, and we watched, you know, some of the warm-ups, and their kicker just looked very, very bad. He just did. And, you know, and so when they line up to kick the ball, I'm already thinking that, you know, we're kind of at the edge of his range. I don't think he's going to make it, even if he gets a clean kick. You know, he was missing from that range, you know, just against air. So you think, you know, for him, he's got to lower the trajectory. It's at the edge of his, what he can do. And, you know, and of course, it's not even their starting line that you put, you know, on a field goal unit. It's, you know, sometimes it's even some of your smaller backup linemen. And you know, that doesn't mix well with Ashawn. And, you know, he's seen a barrel in there pretty easily and, you know, got a handful of that ball.
No, he did. What do you think about Christian Jones? I don't blame him for the botched punt. The ball kind of took a bad hop on him, but he definitely redeemed himself on the next punt return.
He did. And you know what? On the botched punt, and it's hard. I find myself wanting to give Chattanooga almost too much credit because when they punted that ball, they had sort of a strange alignment that they used. And so they had really wide gaps. And so they let our guys kind of leak in. And they were kind of close to blocking it, but not really close. But they all kind of leaked in through the line of scrimmage. And then he kicked a short hopper. And it took a couple of bounces and, you know, kind of shortstop style. You know, Christian just wasn't squared up on it and kind of missed it. And so you never can count on the other team bobbling and dropping the ball, but there's a reason you kick it like that so that they might. There's an opportunity that they might. And so I don't know, maybe I'm giving them more credit and you know, by way of giving them more credit, it saves me, you know, from kind of having to get on Christian a little bit. But, you know, I think it was intentional, at least the style and what they wanted to get out of it. And they just got everything that they wanted out of it, except for converting it into a touchdown. But boy, when he caught the ball in the air, he was lights out. I mean, he made a couple moves and then he bought the corner and he was gone.
Oh, absolutely. It wasn't even in doubt after he hit the corner, right? Because there was nobody there for them to even block.
Yeah.
I will say, to be critical for a second to our gunners, Kenny Bell and John Fulton, you know, were manning those positions. We didn't see DeAndre White and Landon Collins, our typical gunners. And I thought that both Kenny Bell on his almost botched play and John Fulton on Christian Jones' botched punt, both of those times, they had no idea where the ball was.
Right.
So, you know, on this show, we don't hold any punches. We call it as we see it. And I just saw a noticeable difference as opposed to, I'll just say both of those guys, I hope they coach that up, you know, between now and the next big game 4 days from now.
Yes, indeed. Speaking of that, you know, big game, you know, you keep calling it a big game, you know, 4 days from now, you know, we're playing, you know, Clown College in West Georgia, right?
Yeah, that's that team down the road, right? Isn't that what we referred to them in years past?
Yeah.
And I think, didn't I hear that the line was 14 when it first opened?
You know, I saw that as well, and I think it's down. There's been a lot of action on the Auburn side, and the last I saw it was down to, I heard 9.5. Last time I checked, it was 10.5. So. I'm not surprised that 14 drew out some action. You know, Auburn and 14 in a close game like this probably isn't a bad bet.
Man, there's going to be some people losing their money on that. Man, let me just go ahead and say that I don't think it's going to be quite as bad as last year, but this is going to be a 20-point game. This game is not even going to be in doubt in the fourth quarter. And so,
well, hold your score and tell me some of what. Why do you think that? We can just elaborate a little bit on kind of our next game thing, because you know this one is a significant game to you know kind of to the program, to the state. You know, gets a lot of attention. What you know, kind of you know, not a full on breakdown, but give me some of the things that you're thinking.
Well, I mean, this is a team that comes into this game where they have really not had to be challenged through the air. They have been able to, I think they come in with the leading rushing offense in the SEC.
Yep.
You know, they have had SEC games this year where they have only attempted 7 passes. And so Nick Marshall, their JUCO transfer quarterback, has not really been tested. And I guess what I mean by that is he's a small version of Cam Newton. Okay. And so the way I think about these kind of things is I go back to that 2010 game when we were up 24-0 against Cam Newton. And the reason I mention that is because Nick Saban had already figured out that Gus Malzone offense by halftime. The difference in that game is we didn't have the twos and threes that we do now. You and I talked about in that football game that when we had to bring out our starters – and we had to bring in backups late in that game is where Cam Newton made a couple big runs that really was the difference in them being able to come back and win.
One thing that we did say in that post game, and it's there, right? We talk about an Alex, you know, Watkins being out of position, and we talked about some of the other guys. You know, like you said, when we played containment against them, and we just didn't have the reserves to do it. And one of the things that we said is that, you know, give me one player from last year's team to really pivot how this game turns out, and it was Brandon Dietrich. You know, give me Brandon Dietrich, a big defensive end that could step up and set the edge, and we win that game convincingly.
Yes, And so for me, you know, take nothing away from the success they've had, but we have the horses and we know what offense is coming. And so to me, we are going to stop the run like we did last year. We're going to force this kid to pass, and we have the secondary to make plays in the back end of the defense. So I guess the better way to say this is we are going to be able to stop the run with 6 guys. We're going to be able to play our typical base nickel. And so, you know, a quarterback that comes into this game, and I need to pull up his stats real quick and see how many passes he's done for the year. But this guy's going, it's going to be your typical force your quarterback to throw to beat us. And I just don't think he's going to be able to deliver.
Yeah, I agree. And that's one thing that's kind of magical about the, you know, the talent certainly, but the schemes that we run on defense as well, is that, you know, typically when you think of a team in nickel, you attack that by running it. And, you know, because with the two high safety kind of keeping a lid on the passing, you know, it's difficult, it's, you know, to consistently and aggressively pass against that. And so, well, you break the nickel by running, you know, pat our team on the back, or you know, call me a homer, or look at tape for the last 4 years. We have been very good at stopping the run. And Tommy, you and I call it our base defense. And we're long on tape, you know, on record for calling the nickel our base defense. And we call the true 3-4. We call that the Saban base because he likes to call that our base. But we run more than 50% of our snaps out of a nickel formation. And we still, over the last 4 or 5 years, are right at the top in terms of leading the country in run defense. So that makes us really, really dangerous because we're tough to run against, and we're tough to run against while playing a nickel. And so you take a team that is maybe 1.5 dimensional, you know, like this Auburn squad is. If we can play discipline, containment against the run, it could get ugly. And there were certainly times where, you know, Chattanooga, I get that it's different personnel, but it's scheming and it's responsibility that's consistent. And they were running, you know, plays and kind of options and kind of, you know, find the ball kind of plays. And a player would pivot and run around, you know, where typically they find green acres, and they were running into a wall of defenders. And, you know, that was 2 or 3 misdirections into a play. There were no running angles. There were no running lanes. And if we can continue to do that, it could be an ugly game.
Well, I mean, they come into this game, they are second behind Army, okay, and they're just barely above Navy. So listen to what I just said. The top 4 rushing teams in the country are Army, Auburn, Navy, and Georgia Tech.
Yeah.
What has happened when Georgia Tech has played a team that can out-physical them up front and push them further back in the backfield? They have blown up Georgia Tech. And so there has been some games Georgia Tech has played where they have got the you-know-what kicked out of them.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's not going to work against these guys. and that's what I think we're going to see. I think we're going to see, you know, is Mason going to have success running the ball? Yes. Is he going to average 3 yards a carry like he did last year? Sure. Is Nick Marshall going to connect on a couple? Yes. But he's not going to connect on very many. I think you're going to see a 5, you know, he's going to complete 7 out of 19 for the ball game type of stats.
Mm.
And so I think that they are going to be long on the down and distance. They are going to be in 3rd and longs because here's the difference, you know, and somebody's going to say, oh, this is a lazy analogy. Well, Cam Newton was 250 pounds and he was built like a fullback and he ran like a deer.
Yep.
Nick Marshall's not that guy.
Right.
And so Nick Marshall at 6'1", 210, is that small? No, it's not. But the other thing I want to point out here real quick is what I think is going to happen is Mr. Nick Marshall's going to run early in this game, and he's going to get tattooed a couple times the way Jordan Jefferson did for LSU, and he's going to say, I don't run a run anymore.
Right.
I'm done today. And so that's the other thing I think the media is not touching on is that two-prong running attack is going to be a one-prong running attack by the second quarter.
Yep. Yep. What do you think? Let's kind of flip the field in that game. That was their offense against our defense. What do you think when we've got the ball against their defense?
You know, I think that early on, you know, they're going to have the numbers that they're going to be able to hang in there early on. But the biggest thing I think for Auburn is they don't have the depth yet. They don't have the See, the other thing, too, about Auburn that I think is so key here compared to that 2010 team is, you know, they don't have the senior leadership. You know, they've got some Yes. seniors on their team, but they don't have the veteran leadership that we know is so crucial. And so, you know, when you look at some of these numbers here, for example, you know, one of their starting defensive tackles is 6'3", 269 pounds.
Yep.
One of their defensive ends is 6'2", 240. Okay. And so they do have some size at the linebacker position. I think Jake Holland is going to be, you know, his athleticism is going to be lacking in this game.
Yeah.
You know, I think we're going to be able to test their corners. Their corners don't have the range that, you know, that, that they need to have. They're 5'10", 5'11". They're not big guys. You know, they're both 200 pounds. So, you know, I just think that they're going to come out and want to run their four down linemen, and we're going to be able to have our way because we're going to run two tight ends, and we're going to be able to – our five linemen and two tight ends are going to match up against their front four with their two linebackers and their small nickel cornerback. And, you know, it's going to be the typical way you draw it up, right? Running back, about the 10 yards from the line of scrimmage, I need you to make the safety miss, and you're going to have a big run. Yep. I think we're going to see several big 15, 20-yard plays and explosive plays, as Coach Saban likes to say, in this ball game.
Yeah, I agree. I think we'll have success, you know, running the ball against them, you know, when we're not passing the ball. You know, and I say that kind of kidding, but, you know, they let Tennessee score 21 points against them. And, you know, Tennessee was kind of back and forth with them, you know, until they kind of turned the ball over a little bit and kind of game got out of their hands. But, you know, Tennessee was competitive with them, and Arkansas was competitive with them on the offensive side of the ball. You know, one stat that I posted, you know, someone listed out all of our common opponents. And so we're both in the SEC, you know, West. And so we've had five common opponents, which is, you know, a pretty good number, you know, relative to the number of games that we've played. And so they listed, you know, how many points did the common opponents score against them versus, you know, against us? And the average difference was 17 points, that the common opponents scored 17 more points on average against Auburn than they did against us. And so what's interesting is we're averaging 9 points a game allowed. That includes the A&M game, right? And so if you really kind of want to take that out, that's fine. If not, 9 is still a low number. And so the difference, it's almost hard to say, right? The common opponents score 17 more points against Auburn than they do against Alabama. Intersect that with Alabama only allows 9 points per game.
Right.
So they score twice as many points on average against Auburn as we allow.
Sure. No, that's a very good point that the listener made. And, you know, the other thing I'll mention too is, you know, when you look at those common opponents, I guess the main thing I want to touch on is that LSU game. LSU won by 2 touchdowns and they just smashed them. And we smashed LSU.
That's a 5-touchdown difference, right? We beat them by 3 touchdowns. They lost by 2.
So, you know, I don't think it's going to be 49-0 as much as I'd love for it to be.
Right.
But I'm going to tell you that this is going to be a 2 field goals, 4. Oh gosh. Yeah, this is going to be a 41. I could see this being a 41-10 game.
Okay.
This is not going to be in doubt at all. This is going to be much to do about nothing, and ESPN is going to say, why did we go do College Game Day in Auburn, Alabama?
Well, they won't do that. They'll say, wow, this Alabama team is even better than we thought.
And real quick, before you say your part, how awesome that we're going to kick their tail when they're ranked number 4, because that's going to make us look even that much better.
Oh yeah, yeah, that's exactly right. I am a lie. It's my score is not as say robust as what you've got. I think they do make a couple of plays. They may even take the early lead because there's going to be some emotion that they're going to have to exercise out, and that we're going to have to kind of, you know, make their ass quit, if you will. And so I see them maybe scoring a few more points than you've said, and that kind of consuming time, and us not scoring quite as many points as you said. You said 41-10. I'm saying 34-18.
I'll take either one. That works.
Sure.
Absolutely. I mean, sure. I just think this number 2 in the nation rushing offense is such a paper tiger. And when you look at the fact that number's up there with Army and Navy and Georgia Tech, okay, what does that really mean?
Well,
Yeah. How's Georgia Tech doing this year?
Well, it said something about the company you keep, right? It's an incredible, you know, if you say it by itself, you know, we're the second leading rushing team in the country. Wow. That has a wow factor. But then you go look at those metrics, and it is telling that Army, Navy, and Georgia Tech are on those, you know, that's the company that they're keeping. And, you know, I don't have all their records in front of me. I know,
right.
I know Notre Dame, who, you know, we all know is not, you know, maybe that good this year. I think that they blew out, you know, Navy pretty well. You take a one dimensional team like that, and it's easy to do, you know, so I don't know. I think it's telling that, you know, the company they keep, I would not have guessed that those were, the other teams, you know, it would make me wonder how far down the list, and I ask this rhetorically, but how far down that list do you have to get before you get, you know, a good grouping of top 10 teams? It looks like, or it sounds to me at least that Auburn's a pretty good outlier there.
No, they are. And, you know, they come into this game ranked number 2 in the nation offensively running the ball, but they're 104 passing the ball.
Yeah. See, there you go.
And so I just got to say real quick that the balance that we always talk about, this is the game that we're going to say this is why balance kills.
Right. Yep. Yep.
So I'm definitely looking forward to this. I wish I could be there in person to witness this.
Yeah, this is going to be good. And I'm going to be watching that and rewinding it and watching it, you know, again, and just enjoying spending some time with it. So I'm certainly looking forward to it. Hey, let me hit up some of the reviews that we're getting on iTunes, and we've got a couple. I think you know, we weren't able to do those last week, and so I want to spend a minute with these. We got 3 in the last little bit, and so we're up to 42 rankings. Again, we really, really do appreciate that. Our objective is 50, you know, by the SEC championship game, and so, you know, kind of underscore the opportunity. We hope you guys, you know, get out there and leave us some reviews. We certainly do appreciate it. I've got 2 that are a little long. I'll hit kind of the short one here. Getting my Tide fix in upstate New York before the storm is the poster here. This podcast is a must for all Bama fans. Love your non-biased breakdown of games. I love making my own analysis of games and waiting to hear the podcast to match my thought with you guys. Keep up the great work. Definitely appreciate that one. Here's the one I kind of teased last week because I thought it was really good. And so this one's a little long, but stick with it. It's Shin John. And so the title is "From a Cold Dead Fish to Crimson Colored Blood." that's pretty cool. I married a Crimson Tide fanatic, not knowing a thing about football. I have fallen in love with Alabama only through the podcast. In parentheses, my husband has struggled to make me understand for over 5 years. I love the review and explanation of plays and how they could have gone wrong but didn't. It made me realize how orchestrated Alabama is, and I watch the games with a new respect. I'm learning the players, positions, and stats, and finally, all caps, finally, an entertaining way. I have been refreshing my podcast playlist every 3 days, or, you know, every hour, waiting for the LSU podcast. And now that she's heard it, I can have an educated conversation with my husband. She said, "My husband keeps eyeballing me and saying, 'Where did you read that? What are you reading?'" And then she says, as if she's having a conversation with her husband, "Yeah, here's someone to watch," or, "Nick is punishing him," or, "Yeah, we had to pull the red shirt off that player." She says, "It's awesome. This podcast is my little secret."
Oh, that's hilarious.
Isn't that awesome?
That is rich. I like that a lot.
That is cool.
That is awesome.
Yeah, and so I enjoy, that's the one I teased last week. Like I said, I enjoy all the reviews, but that one I enjoyed. And then we've got one more. This one has a little bit of a critique on it. This is a 4-star review. And so this is,
okay,
you know, we've asked for authentic reviews. And so this is kind of representative of that. And so I think that's good. Nickel Nick Nasty Naz. Hopefully I pronounced that right. Found the podcast when I was stationed in Okinawa. And so I just want to pause right there and say thank you for your service. We so much appreciate that.
It was nice to get a breakdown of the games, especially with the lack of TV coverage there. I still tune in every week to hear the small subtleties of the game that I may have missed while watching it live. Tom and Dave do a great job, and I like the overall structure of the podcast. From a critical side, he's asking that we say the names right. So I think we miss on some of the player names sometimes, and he kind of puts in parentheses, unless there's some sarcasm that I'm missing, and then he's asking that we put in some recruiting updates. And then P.S., you referred to Reuben Foster. I mentioned this earlier. You referred to Reuben Foster reminding you of Darrell Harris, but stopped. Please elaborate. So I think we covered that base. We like to get into recruiting. Sometimes kind of we get out of the habit of doing a podcast, and so we miss doing that. And so we'll see if we can't do better on that. And, you know, I'm kind of with you. We do on occasion, you know, mispronounce some names. I know we've gotten in the habit of calling him Tana Patrick when it's Tanae. And there's others. I think you like to call Alex Morris, and it's Alex. So there's a couple that we'll kind of mess up on. There probably are some sarcastic ones that we throw in there. I can't think one of those off the top of my head, but I'm sure we work that in. Hey, we do our best, and we try. Sometimes we'll get going into a story, I'll misstate a name, but that's something we can work on. But greatly do appreciate the feedback there. So,
well, that is awesome, man. I appreciate you reading those. Y'all keep them coming, and we'll look forward to going over some more after our next victory.
Absolutely. So get out there and give us some reviews. We appreciate it. In the meantime, everyone have a happy Thanksgiving, safe travels, and make sure you're parked in front of a big screen TV to watch Alabama take care of business against the Tigers on Saturday. With that, this has been another edition of the Alabama Football Podcast. Roll Tide.
Thanks for listening to the Alabama Football Podcast. We love that you're tuned in and hope that you enjoyed the show. We encourage you to reach out and let us know what you like, where we can improve, or just a shout out, a Roll Tide. We are where you are. iTunes, Facebook, Twitter, email newsletters, t-shirts, free roster downloads, and of course, on the web at alabamafootballpodcast.com. Check us out where you'll find easy links to your favorite way to follow the Tide. Got that, Coach?
Aye.
Of course. Roll Tide.